Defense and rebounding. Defense and rebounding.
What's up, guys? Welcome to Birdwatch. I'm Christian Clark, the Pelicans beat writer for Nold.com and The Advocate, coming at you on Wednesday afternoon with Jeff Nowak.
Hey, y'all.
Jeff, we have some news.
Do we?
A little bit. After 2 months of waiting, twiddling my thumbs, sitting on my hands, and a lot of anxiety, the Pelicans have a new head coach. They've named Stan Van Gundy. I guess it's not official, but Stan tweeted it. Stan is the seventh head coach.
In 2020, you know, that's an official announcement. Yeah.
We confirmed it too. You know, we're doing our jobs over here. Stan Van Gundy is the seventh coach in franchise history. I think this is a pretty interesting hire on a lot of levels. I mostly like it. You know, I think that the Pelicans wanted Ty Lue. That was really their number one target. As soon as they made the move to part ways with Alvin Gentry in August, there was even a report, I think, in The Athletic a couple weeks ago that the Pelicans had considered firing Alvin midseason, you know, right after that 13-game losing streak and bringing in Ty. So I think Ty was their guy. You know, David Griffin kind of put him on in Cleveland, and they had a lot of success together. It did not work out. I mean, Ty took the most attractive job on the market to be the coach of the Los Angeles Clippers, and he got freaking paid. And, you know, I can understand why he did that. So I think that the Pelicans had to readjust. You know, they interviewed 9 guys, I was told, and eventually settled on Stan Van Gundy. You know, Stan took a year off, did some media last year. I thought he was excellent at calling games, but he's probably best known for his work with the Orlando Magic. He led them to 2 Eastern Conference Finals. He led them to a finals appearance in 2009. He was also most recently the coach and president of basketball operations of the Pistons. You know, this situation here is much different than Detroit. And I almost think you have to mostly throw the Detroit stuff out the window because, you know, Stan was in charge of personnel and he was coaching. That's not going to be the case here. He's just going to be coaching. And that's something that the Pelicans, you know, kind of really emphasized in talking to different reporters, I think, today. But, Jeff, what are just your general thoughts on the SVG hire in New Orleans?
Stan the man. Well, the good news is, worst case scenario, we're going to have some pretty fun press conferences to watch. He seems like the type of guy that's just going to go off when he goes off, and his demeanor, he's just a goofy guy, and when he does, it's always entertaining. So that's a good thing.
Extremely memeable and quotable, which is fantastic. Yes. From a beat writer perspective.
And the nicknames just, you know, write themselves. But it is funny that you mentioned the 2 months of anxiety and whatever, because I couldn't tell if you were talking about the hiatus or the last 2 months, because either way, it was like, as far as the Pelicans are concerned, it's just like this giant looming question mark. And that's been basically the second half of the season. You brought up the midseason thing. I do wonder, you know, if the Pelicans had any indication one way or the other, if they did fire Alvin Gentry, whether Tyronn Lue would have accepted the job, and if the idea that he wouldn't, maybe is what saved Gentry throughout the season. Who knows? But either way, the coaching carousel has been really, this has got to be one of the more interesting years of just, you know, there's like 7 seats and to see who lands where. And I think a lot of this is, you wonder whether Stan was the guy to begin with in terms of, you know, was he even in the top 3? And then the top 3 went somewhere else. But I think from the Pelicans' perspective, and I'm kind of rambling here, but I think that considering where they were and what they have to look at going forward, I think a guy who has a track record of developing big guys especially is a win for them in terms of who they could have gotten to come in. He's gotten a lot out of players that, you know, were not a sure thing. He's gotten a lot out of high draft picks. You mentioned Orlando. I think one of the funny things about Stan Van Gundy's coaching career is that when he left Orlando, there was probably a really resounding idea that he didn't get the most out of that team. He didn't get the most out of Dwight Howard. And Dwight has always been a guy that kind of goofs around and is tough to manage. You saw that when he went to LA and kind of had run-ins with Kobe. But, you know, looking back in hindsight, and seeing what Dwight Howard did after that point, you can make the argument that he overachieved with that team and bringing them to the finals. So I think it'll be interesting to see what he does as he comes in and how he kind of reforms this roster in the image that he wants it to be.
Yeah, the word that a lot of, you know, people in the Pels organization and people kind of around the team use when they talk about Stan Van Gundy is teacher. Stan Van Gundy knows basketball. I mean, he's known as a grinder, somebody who watches a ton of tape, somebody who holds pretty long practices, which can be intense at times. And if you just look at his track record, I mean, I think he's, you know, fairly flexible. Like, he's willing to play many different ways. And generally speaking, his teams play defense and they take pretty good care of the ball. And I think those two areas in particular were probably attractive for the Pelicans. I mean, they were 21st in defensive efficiency last season. They were 29th, second to last in turnover percentage. Here's a stat for you. I looked this up today. SVG has been a coach for 12 seasons total in the NBA. His teams have finished in the top 10 in defense 9 times. They finished in the top 10 in turnover percentage 6 times. I mean, his teams generally play, you know, smart, composed basketball. And I kind of think that is what the Pelicans need in some ways. Like, they need someone to come in and you know, teach their young guys and really drill down with them the right way to play, you know, help them form good habits. I think that Stan will be good for a Nickeil Alexander-Walker, for example. I think he will be good for a Jackson Hayes as far as, you know, just helping those guys learn the game. And, you know, I think if those guys are going to be players, then they've got a pretty good chance to do it under SVG. You know, SVG has some experience with J.J. Redick. He coached J.J. When he was going into his second year in Orlando. That's when they started working together. You know, J.J. has credited Stan with really just, like, teaching him the fundamentals of basketball. There are a bunch of different interviews. I mean, the respect level is clearly very high. So I think this was a good hire. I mean, the Pelicans are loaded with young players. They're going to have probably at least 6 guys who are 25 or younger on next year's roster. We know about the draft capital, 8 first-round picks in the next 6 drafts. I think Stan is a guy who can work with those young guys and hopefully, you know, mold them into a winner.
Going into this, one of the looming questions was, okay, are you going to hire a guy who is going to play the same type of basketball in terms of getting up and down the floor, emphasizing total possessions and, you know, getting good shots early, versus a guy who's going to be a more defensive-minded coach and try to get more fundamentally sound defensive sets going and, you know, play basketball that makes sense in the final 2 minutes of a game. And I think that's what you got. If you wanted to go with a guy like Kenny Atkinson and who would have kind of been able to try to take that and mold it a little bit but still kind of see that same, like, up-tempo style, you could have done that, and that's not what they did. So I think one of the things that you're going to have to keep track of is, you know, how are the young players kind of adjusting to a different brand of basketball? Zion came in and he played, what, 21 games, I want to say. And you saw him in that type of system where it's kind of free-flowing, and he didn't have to do a lot in terms of, you know, running complex offensive sets. And a guy like Jackson Hayes, I don't know where he would be if you tried to put him in a real offensive set a lot of the time. So those are going to be the guys that you have to watch and see how Stan can kind of coach them up and get them to play more sound basketball techniques. I think it's going to be a struggle early on because you have a ton of guys who don't know anything else, and that's going to be a big change for them. You know, a guy like Drew has played how many years? 12 at this point. So he's kind of got that experience of going from system to system, and he'll adjust. Favors the same way. And Redick the same way. So you have the veteran leadership that I think will help them out a lot.
Yeah, I think it's definitely going to feel like an adjustment for a lot of players on this roster. I mean, you know, Alvin has a reputation for, you know, just being more of a person who manages personality, and he wants to play a specific style of offense that's really kind of, you know, his coaching style, what it's grounded in, is playing with pace and shooting a lot of threes. You know, not necessarily known as a guy who's going to put you through a bunch of intense practices, put you through the ringer, so to speak. I imagine that will feel like a bit of an adjustment for some of the younger guys on this roster. I mean, I bet especially early in the season, like, they're going to get coached up, and you know they might get yelled at a little bit. I mean, Stan is not a guy who shies away from confrontation. I mean, I've listened to a bunch of different interviews with him in the last week, and you know, he's said that I'm a guy who embraces confrontation. I mean, I don't think you could, he said that I don't think you can really understand what the problem is and then, you know, fix that problem without a little confrontation from time to time. You know, as far as the rest of his basketball philosophy goes, I don't think he is as rigid about the way the game is supposed to be played as Alvin. You know, I just talked about Alvin's kind of emphasis on playing up tempo and shoot a lot of threes. I mean, Stan Van Gundy coach teams have shot a lot of threes, like those Orlando Magic teams with Dwight Howard, you know, ranked no lower than second in 3-point attempts in his five seasons there. Like, they did play a very distinct way. But the read I get on it and talking to different people is, you know, Stan is going to do what, you know, is best for his personnel. He's not necessarily going to play one way if he thinks his personnel is suited to play a different way. So I think he's a guy who's willing to adapt. I think he's a guy you'll see try a bunch of different things. And I think, you know, really this Pelicans roster, they have two young building blocks in Zion Williamson and Brandon Ingram. And I think, you know, those two guys give the Pelicans the luxury of being able to play multiple different ways. I mean, they can bring in a traditional center next to those guys and just go, that's your 3-4-5. Or, you know, if they want to go small in certain scenarios, Brandon Ingram is your power forward and Zion Williamson is your center in stretches. So I think that they have options. And, yeah, I mean, I could just see, I guess, stylistically them going a number of different ways.
Yeah, and I think the what you brought up before is an interesting one, which is, you know, I honestly think that kind of getting into it a little bit with the players and developing an edge with some of those guys is not necessarily a bad thing. I think they need that. I think we've talked before about how this is an incredibly quiet team. They don't seem to mind losing as much as you'd want them to. I just rewatched Moneyball yesterday, and the scene where Brad Pitt goes into the locker room and Jeremy Giambi's dancing on the table, and he just hits the stereo with the baseball bat. It's like, and they all get quiet. It's like, yeah, that's what losing's supposed to sound like. And it does to the extent that it's quiet, but it's not, you know, you really need these guys to be angry that they lost and have that be a productive thing. It can very easily go the wrong way where, and you've seen that with Stan in the past, and he had issues with Shaq when he was in Miami for a short spell. And, you know, Dwight Howard, you know, I don't think they got into it as much as Dwight just kind of clowned on him a lot. There's a lot of clips you can find on YouTube of Dwight doing impressions of his head coach, which I think, you know, they managed that situation pretty well. But I think in most, when the players start doing like comical impressions of their head coach during press conferences, that can become a pretty toxic situation pretty quick. You know, that's going to be an element to watch in terms of, you know, you want to see Zion get more vocal, and you know, when things are going poorly, he needs to be the guy who steps up, or Brandon Ingram needs the guy who steps up and calls people out. And I don't think they have that guy right now beyond maybe J.J. Redick. Drew Holiday's never been a vocal guy. And that's, you know, beyond any philosophy stuff, which obviously is going to be a ton to talk about over the next few months, that's going to be something that he needs to kind of change the culture there.
Yeah, I mean, I think Stan will definitely help in that regard of them being a quiet team. I mean, that was really, you know, one of the biggest complaints from the coaching staff and even some of the players is like, we just have a bunch of quiet dudes. Stan is not that. I mean, he could be abrasive at times. And I think you're right that might, you know, they might need some element of that. I think Stan too, I mean, there's the cliche, you know, do you hate to lose more than you love to win? I think Stan is that guy. Like, I think losing eats at him. He despises it. And I think to kind of, you know, continue to change the culture in New Orleans, you know, maybe that's what you need a little bit. So I like all that, those aspects of it. I think the question marks about Stan, there are a couple. You know, I heard, I listened to The Jump today, and I heard Kendrick Perkins kind of say something along the lines of like, you know, Stan's a good coach. He just needs to realize that kind of the game has changed in the last decade. And I think
Perk's not in it.
Yeah. I think what he meant by that was, you know, maybe you can't be holding these like 3-hour practices all the time or whatever. Like, you can't push players as hard as you used to be able to. I also read a column, I think, from Mike Scotto, where an anonymous assistant coach, you know, compared SVG to Tom Thibodeau. I think that's going a little far. You know, I guess we'll see. I mean, I think on one hand that's true. Like, you probably can't push most guys as hard as you did 10 years ago. On the other hand, like, I think the Pelicans, you know, two young stars who they hope to build around, Zion Williamson and Brandon Ingram, I'm pretty optimistic that those guys are coachable. Like, those guys are, you know, willing to take, you know, stand, kind of getting up in their business and telling them that this needs to change. So I'm optimistic in that regard. You know, I guess the other thing too is, like, one of the big question marks is just generally speaking, you know, how does Stan relate to star players? You hit on it a little bit earlier. I mean, Shaq, there was kind of some friction there on Stan's way out of Miami. Obviously, it was an ugly exit with Dwight. I mean, I think it's a fair question. Stan also had a ton of success with both of those guys. I mean, he probably maximized the team with Dwight Howard as his best player and that cast just about as good as you could have. You know, I think it's something to monitor, like, how does Stan, you know, like, relate to Zion Williamson, and like, can they form a relationship that's not just like player coach, something deeper? But I'm not overly concerned. I mean, I still think this is a really good hire.
Yeah, and well, as I said earlier, you could make a really good argument that he overachieved in the Dwight Howard years. And I'm curious, how many players can you name off of that NBA Finals roster from, I think it was 2010?
2009.
Yeah. How many players can you name?
Okay, here we go. Dwight Howard, obviously. Mm-hmm. Hedo Turkoglu.
Yep.
Rashard Lewis. Jameer Nelson. Courtney Lee. Rafer Alston.
Yep.
I think that might be it. Oh, Tony Batty.
Yep. There's okay, one other guy that there's two other guys that I would say, well, one you really should get.
Yeah. JJ Redick.
Yes. And then there's a few others that you're going to hit yourself in the head if you don't get them.
Oh man, you're putting me on the spot. I don't know. Tell me.
All right. So one of them, which, you know, I watched that series I grew up a Celtics fan, so I remember it pretty vividly, but Marcin Gortat was always he's one of those guys that was in the league forever. And he's just a guy that would just hit the Polish hammer, I think was his nickname.
Yeah.
And then Tyronn Lue.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And the other one that I think is pretty interesting in retrospect is Mikhail Petras.
Interesting.
Who,
okay,
I think had a lot of similar qualities to Jrue Holiday when you kind of look at their body of work. So, you know, I think you look at that roster, that's an NBA Finals roster. You might not find one with less top-end talent than that one.
Yeah, I mean, I think that team in particular is really interesting. I mean, it's an example of the parts fit really well, and they were forward-thinking. I mean, they shot a ton of threes at a time when not a lot of teams were doing that. They started Hedo Turkoglu and Rashard Lewis at the forward spots, which really opened things up for Dwight Howard inside. Yeah, I mean, I think that was obviously a fantastic coaching job by Stan. It's interesting if you kind of dig in on the history of that team. I mean, they really went into the year thinking, like, Tony Batty is going to be our starting power forward, and he got hurt. And, you know, that's just how a lot of success happens. It happens accidentally. They started Rashard Lewis and Hedo at the forward spots, guys who could handle and shoot the three, and obviously had a heck of a run. But, yeah, man, I mean, that 08-09 Magic team was freaking awesome. I mean, they were so good.
And you know, I usually don't, Kendrick Perkins, I usually don't listen to much of his takes with, you know, I take them with a grain of salt. I actually do trust his assessment of Stan Van Gundy as a coach, being a guy who played against him in that Eastern Conference Finals series. And those battles between Kendrick Perkins and Dwight Howard, you know, there were like tectonic plate type collisions going on in the post. So I think his input on that, on Stan as a coach, is actually pretty interesting compared to some of the other takes he throws out there. But yeah, I mean, and that was a long time ago. That was a decade ago.
It was.
And it's kind of remarkable that you know, he's as young as he is, considering he was the head coach of that team for quite a while. So yeah, I mean, trying to bridge that gap and teach a guy who's, you know, going to be 21. Is Zion going to be 21 by next season? I don't even know. He's not a teenager anymore, so we don't have to do that. But like,
yeah,
that's
just
gonna,
turned
20
in July.
Yeah. 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 I mean, how do you, you had to relate to Dwight Howard in 2009, and then a dozen years later, you have to try to connect and coach a guy who's a child. He's a child. He's not an adult yet. And it's, how do you, I don't think I could relate to a 20-year-old at this point. I'm 30. So that's, it's going to be interesting to see how he bridges that gap.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, we've kind of established that Stan had a lot of success in Miami for 2 years and change, even though he wasn't necessarily the coach when they did win the title. Was obviously, you know, had a bunch of success in Orlando. His run in Detroit was, you know, the least fruitful of his previous three coaching stops. They only made the playoffs once in four seasons. They're a little below 500, I think, if you look at the overall record. It was just a unique situation because that was a time when, you know, a select few head coaches were also getting the power to oversee all of the personnel. You know, Stan was one of the guys who got to be the president of basketball operations and the coach. Doc Rivers was another name. Tom Thibodeau. I think we've seen, you know, apart from like Greg Popovich, that just doesn't really work. Like, having that power is just too difficult. There's too much on your plate. You know, Stan will obviously not be doing that in New Orleans. Like, David Griffin, you know, runs the show as far as personnel is concerned, and is a guy who, you know, has a ton of control over the organization. I guess my question for you is, how do you just, like, evaluate Stan's time in Detroit, and, like, how much do you take it under consideration, you know, now that he's just now the coach again in New Orleans?
Well, I do need to look it up. Is he the one who decided to trade Chris Middleton for Brandon Jennings? Because if so, then it was bad. Because it was around that time. And I don't know if it was during his tenure. But the Pistons as an organization, you know, they've had really, really just no direction for a long time. So it's really tough to gauge the performance of the coach. I will say that he evaluated talent pretty well, especially, you know, he found Andre Drummond in the first round and turned him into an all-star caliber center. So from that perspective, if you kind of take the wins and losses away from that roster and you just look at, you know, the players that were developed from his time there, you know, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope was a rookie on that team. Spencer Dinwiddie was a rookie on that team. Brandon Jennings was on that team, so I believe it was before Stan's tenure there. So he gets a pass on that one. But yeah, Josh Smith was on that team. Tayshaun Prince, Greg Monroe. So I don't know. I can't say I'm as familiar as I'd need to be to make a determination on how he performed. But there are some nuggets there that you can look and say, okay, he evaluated these players, he drafted these players, and a lot of them turned out to be quality NBA players. So
yeah, I really don't even consider his 4-year run there that much, you know, with this new situation, to be perfectly honest with you. It's just a whole different thing when you're, you know, in charge of the personnel too. And, you know, he stepped into that situation and there was not a whole lot there, to be perfectly honest with you. So I don't think it's that much of a factor. I am really curious how, you know, the David Griffin, Stan Van Gundy partnership is going to work. I mean, look, we know that Griff was a guy who, you know, just wanted a certain level of control last season. I mean, you know, frankly, that was a complaint of, you know, coaching who has since departed. You know, I think there's definitely a lot of respect there. I mean, Stan would not have gotten this job if they didn't see a lot of eye to eye on the stuff in the interview process. And, you know, I think the way they kind of, you know, balance decision making is going to be really interesting. I mean, I think that, you know, Stan is going to kind of want control over, like, hey, this is my team and I'm going to coach him up. So I think that dynamic will be interesting, but I am pretty optimistic it worked. You know, I think they see eye to eye on a lot of stuff. And, you know, I think that Stan is a really big fan of Brandon Ingram and Zion Williamson. And that's kind of the main thing here. There's just a lot you can do with those two guys. And those are kind of your two tent pole pieces for the next 5 years or so.
It's one heck of a tent. I will say that one of the things Stan does do about as well as anyone, he wins basketball games. He has a career record of 523 and 384. It's a 577 winning percentage. He's had 1, 2, 3, 4 losing seasons in his career. The final two came in Detroit, and they were 37 and 45, 39 and 43. When you look at that roster that he was playing with, it's really not that bad. And he did take them to the playoffs in the 2015-2016 season. They lost in the first, they got swept in the first round. But, you know, for a team that has this culture of losing, bringing in a guy that just has no familiarity with it in terms of what he expects is, I think, a very positive thing to see. You know, you never know what you're going to get with a young head coach. You know, the Celtics brought in Brad Stevens. That has worked out well, but without anything to go off, even a guy like Ty Lue, you don't really know what he's going to bring culture-wise. You know what Stan brings culture-wise. And absolutely. I mean, a 577 winning percentage for a coach that didn't, you know, have LeBron James or, you know, Steph Curry or somebody like that to really kind of stake his claim to. I think that's pretty impressive. You can say he had Dwayne Wade for those early Miami seasons, but he wasn't there that long. So I think that's, you know, one of the biggest challenges of taking over a team like the Pelicans is erasing that kind of built-in idea that they're going to lose, that they're just not going to be a competitive team in the West. That's going to be a challenge for him. But I think if you had to pick somebody, not a terrible choice.
Yeah, the resume is really, really impressive. I mean, going to the playoffs in 8 of 12 years. You know, David Griffin talks a lot about, you know, we're building a culture here, and to do that, you know, you just need to form the right habits over time. I mean, Stan isn't going to be a guy who just demands that you have the right habits as a basketball player. And, you know, before we start using the C word, championships, like, this team just, you know, needs to get back to the playoffs. And I think that Stan is definitely a guy who can, you know, mold a lot of these young guys into a consistent playoff team at the very least. I think they're going to be six guys at least who are 25 or younger who are expected to be back next season. I mean, we'll see kind of about Alonzo Ball. That's one of the big question marks.
And that doesn't even include draft picks.
No, yeah, they have the 13th pick, and then, you know, a bunch more picks coming up in the years to come. Let's talk about, I guess, next year's roster construction, and you know, maybe if this hire offered any hints. Do you think, you know, hiring Stan makes it more or less likely that Jrue Holiday is back with the Pelicans next year?
It's so tough to measure whether, you know, I don't even know if the hire is as important as being able to, you know, finally kind of take stock of the NBA as it's going to look next season. You know, there could be, they haven't set the new salary cap yet, have they? Or did I miss that?
They did not. They've kind of said that we've expected to just, like, artificially inflate it to the level it was at this past season.
Right.
So it's probably just not going to change.
But, I mean, that's a factor. You know, he's the I want to say he's the highest paid player on the team, unless something changed that I wasn't aware of. You know, and is that going to be a consideration? Do you make a move to try to get cap relief? I don't know. Yeah, he is. J.J. Redick's the next highest at $13 million, which is kind of crazy when you think about it. It's tough. I think the guy that this hiring could impact is Favors, because there are a lot of coaches you could bring in where that signing might not have made sense. If they were looking for a particular system, or if they were looking for particular players, I think a guy like Favors makes a heck of a lot of sense if Stan Van Gundy is your coach. So if they have to spend to bring him back, I think that makes sense. So I don't know. I think Jrue stays, but if there's an offer on the table that makes the team better in the long term, I would not be surprised. If someone's willing to overpay, I would not be surprised if he gets moved. Just like I wouldn't have been surprised at the deadline last year.
Yeah, I think the Stan hire probably raises the chances a little bit that they run it back, generally speaking. I think the chances probably went up a little that Jrue is back, that you bring a guy like Derek Favors back. I've actually heard that Derek Favors would be very open to playing for Stan Van Gundy. That's a guy who you know, he could see himself playing for. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, going with Stan as opposed to someone less experienced, like just a Will Weaver, for example, like, yeah, that you probably feel a little more confident that, like, yeah, we can make a playoff run, you know, in the upcoming season than just going with somebody who's not as experienced. You know, the J.J. Redick angle of this is pretty interesting, too. I mean, we hit on a little bit earlier just how much respect J.J. has for Stan. Like, they did a podcast together in 2016 when I think J.J. was doing a podcast for The Vertical, and J.J. said on that one that there's probably no one I have more respect for in the NBA than Stan Van Gundy. He's called him probably the best coach he's played for. You know, J.J.'s played for Doc. He's played for some really successful guys. And, you know, I just think his perspective is so interesting because, you know, he had Stan when he was a young player, when, like, his place in the league was kind of uncertain. Like, J.J. Redick, you know, didn't come in and was like, yeah, I'm a rotation player from day one in Orlando. Like,
he
really
– Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he was a guy with expectations. He was the player of the year in college that year, I think. It was either him or Morrison. I know that was the year they were going back and forth. And he underachieved, you could say, early on.
Yeah, I mean, he was a lottery pick and, you know, like, expectations for sure. And, you know, he didn't really carve out his place from Jump Street, and he slowly started to do that under Stan. He was a bench, a bench reserve on that 09 team that made a run to the finals. And I just keep going back to what JJ said as far as, like, you know, he's one of the best people you can have in terms of just like, hey, I'm gonna teach you how to play team defense, and like we're just gonna, you know, execute these fundamentals. Like, I think this is what this team needs. You know, this team needs that. Even though the game, you know, has changed in a lot of respects in the past 10 years, you probably can't coach, you know, the average player as hard as you did 10 years ago. But I think that's what this team needs. I mean, they need to be coached up, and that's kind of why I like this hire. Like, you know, Stan is going to put in the time and try to coach him up.
I'm curious what you think in the sense that do you think it's beneficial or a negative to try to change the coaching structure and kind of the team culture in a season where there's just like no structure whatsoever? We don't know what's going to start. We don't know what it's going to look like. We don't know whether they're going to try to bubble it. We don't know whether it's going to be fans. You know, what do you think that's helpful in terms of you just kind of wipe the slate clean, or is it just a lot of noise that you have to kind of work through?
Yeah. I mean, when you hire a new head coach, I mean, you have no choice but to implement your new culture. I think, you know, from Jump Street, what I've heard lately is that, you know, it'll probably be a January start. There was like a little buzz that, oh, maybe we push this thing into February or March with the idea of getting a bunch of fans back in the stands. I don't know. I don't know if the teams think they can wait that long because, like, there will be a vaccine widely distributed. But, yeah, I mean, I just think, you know, you just have to come in and do your thing, you know, no matter what the circumstances are.
I want to see outdoor basketball. I've like the Winter Classic for in hockey. I'd love to. I think that would be fun. I, you know, it sounds stupid, but how cool would it be if you like you just set up a basketball court at like the Yale Bowl, and you just like a tenant, like the U.S. Open, right? And you just threw a bunch of fans at, because you can get people outside a lot easier. And, you know, the wind would be a factor, maybe some rain. Who knows?
Well, your defensive strategy then would definitely be form an effing wall, you know, if you're putting an outdoor court.
Right.
Yeah, just wall them off. Yep, just wall them off for the basket, make them shoot a jumper in the wind.
That would be a great analysis. And they're like, well, it was a great release, but the 8-mile-an-hour gust kind of threw it off. Anyway.
Yeah. I think it's really – interesting hire, very memeable, quotable. I'm excited about it as a beat reporter from that perspective. I think the defense, the turnover issues are definitely things that will improve probably as soon as next season. Before we get out of here, just if you're grading it, what would you give it, the hire?
Grading it, I'd give it a B. I mean, obviously he was not the first up on the coaching ladder that they were going after, and unless you get your top target, you don't get an A. And it's not an original hire, you know, so that's gonna knock it down a little bit. But it's an imperfect, this grading system is trash because you can't grade a hire before you actually see what it looks like. But you can't call it a bad hire either, because, you know, anytime you bring in somebody that has a track record of success, I'm not going to say it's a bad thing. I'll give it a solid B with a chance for extra credit based on how things look early on.
I want to say B+. I think, you know, David Griffin did a really nice job in, you know, a pretty tough, I guess, hiring market. A lot of jobs open, a lot of very attractive jobs opening. That was really the thing that stood out. I couldn't believe, you know, how many desirable jobs opened up. It's really interesting. I'm glad this is over. That was a long 2 months. And we will have plenty more for you guys in the coming weeks. We really appreciate you for listening. Subscribe and leave a review. It really helps out. And thanks for listening.
Peace.